Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of House Judiciary to order. It is 1:05 p.m. and it is Monday, February 1st. I'd like to begin by reminding everybody to turn off their cell phone. The members of the Judiciary Committee present are Representative Grunberg, Representative Lynn, Vice Chair Keller, and Representative Klayman, and myself, Chair Ledoux. I'm going to go a little bit out of order today because first I'd like to bring up House Bill 221, which is Foreign Protective Orders. We heard that last week, and I'd like to get that out of committee today. Public testimony on that bill has closed. Are there any questions specifically related to the bill?
No.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
The record shows that I've been properly chastised.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Mr. Clark, would you like to come up here? So, no questions? Are there any comments? No comments? What's the wishes of the committee?
I'll let somebody who was here make the motion.
I'll let Representative Grunberg make the motion.
Twist my arm. I ask unanimous consent that the bill be passed out of committee with individual recommendations.
And attached fiscal?
Yes.
Notes.
And just for the record, so that we know, we didn't do any amending in the bill. So it's House Bill 221. It's, thank you. I've been given a script. No discretion in this business. I move version 29 LS1041/W for House Bill 221 from the House Judiciary Committee with attached fiscal notes with individual recommendations.
Thanks. Hearing no objections, the bill is passed out of committee. We'll take a very short break to sign the book. Thank you, Mr. Clark. Again, next we have before us House Bill 147, Animal Protection, Release, Custody, etc. Representative Grunberg, are you going to be presenting the bill?
I will, and my co-sponsor, Representative Vasquez, should be coming, but may I start to save time?
You may start, and I understand we have a CS for that?
Yes, we do.
So is there anybody on the committee that would like to move the CS for House Bill 147 as a working document?
Madam Chair, I'll move the CS for House Bill 147. That'd be 29-LS0302/D.
Thank you, and I will object for purposes of discussion.
Would you? I usually sit over there.
That would be fine, Representative Grunberg. You can sit where you want. And I'll let the committee know today that this is the first time that I am using this new sort of system without the paper. So bear with me if I do anything wrong.
Technical order.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If we may play musical chairs for a moment, I'd like Nikolai Bailey to sit up here. I work for her, and she has been the brains behind the operation.
All right. Well, why don't we go on record, Representative Grunberg, and you can introduce your staff member.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg, you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Max Grunberg. I represent House District 16, which is in Boniface and Russian Jack in Anchorage. I'm a member of the committee and proud to be a member, actually.
And I will note for the record that our Representative Mellon has just joined us.
And we appreciate the chairs scheduling the bill last year and this year. To my left is Ms. Nikolai Bailey, who's my legislative assistant.
Aye.
And I'm sure if Liz comes in, somebody can just have her come up.
She should be on the way.
Okay. Representative Vasquez and I have introduced the bill with a number of folks as co-sponsors, a lot of people on the committee, and I appreciate that. We have before us the D as in Delta version, and I am prepared, if the chair would like, for me to compare the difference between the last bill that was in front of us and this one. And I am prepared to do that and go over the major things, if you would like.
That's exactly what we'd like, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The title has been changed in some cases to conform with the new amendments. We have Section 1 is a new section that provides that a peace officer may apply for a search warrant, etc. The change in there is a change that appears throughout the first part of the bill, changing the word take to the word seize, because if you if the government takes something that's illegal or not being cared for in this case, that's technically a seizure, and that's what we put throughout here. And I believe that was in the bill to begin with when we had it before the committee before, but I'm not certain.
So, Representative Grunberg, I'm not sure I understand the difference between taking something and seizing something.
Seizure is usually done by the government. And I just think it's a little more accurate. I mean, you could keep it as take, it's been take, but I think the current term that we use is seizure.
And if I may, in this part of the bill, which is the...
Yes, but please identify yourself for the record.
Sorry. Nikolai Bailey, staff to Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you.
In this part of the bill, the animal cruelty bill, it is going to be usually the government that will be seizing the animals if they have been neglected or treated cruelly.
Thank you. Did you have a question, Rep?
I think I have a question. It's coming to me slowly. Isn't in the, I know there's been so much litigation over takings in recent years. Is the seizure concept required, suggest some temporary nature to the taking, rather taking seems to be a little bit more permanent?
Yes.
Thank
because
you.
Because generally, as in Title III, they seize the animal and then there's a right to a hearing. And the, some of the provisions we did in this first section of the bill are to modernize the provisions so that the seizing entity or the custodian, it may be turned over to a humane society, can recompense the cost of care. By the way, for the record, there are three parts to the bill generally. The first part modernizes Title III, the seizure of animals and cost of care. The second part deals with the domestic violence statutes, and the third deals with the family law stuff. There are a few other things. And I'm happy to take questions anytime you want, you know. Okay, moving right ahead. If you look at page 2, you will see that the definition is removed, and that's because we have taken all the definitions and put them at the end of the animal seizure section of Title III, because they're used throughout, and it just makes more sense to keep the definitions together rather than piecemealing them. And the same is in Section 3 of the bill, I mean down at the bottom of page 2. Again, those definitions are found a little later in the bill here, and we'll get to that in a moment.
You know, I don't want to belabor this point, but I'm looking at C's for in place of removing. And I'm wondering whether you actually want to have removing here.
Because where are you, ma'am?
I'm on Section 3, the seizure of the animals.
Yes.
Because...
Oh,
seizing kind of means, you get the impression that it's contraband or something that you're seizing, and actually you're kind of trying to just remove the animals from a dangerous situation. I just point that out.
Madam Chair, you've made a good point. We had the bill drafters just conform this whole thing. And looking on page 2, lines 21, it says, a peace officer shall place the animal in protective custody before seizing it from the location where it's found. If the animal is seized, I do think it conforms in any way. Okay. If you look at the top of page 3, the next change is that it requires that the notice shall be conspicuously posted at the premises where the animal was seized. And that's so that there's as much notice to the owner as possible. Moving ahead down, we have added on page 3, line 23, an animal or custodian will have standing to petition the court, because it may be that if the, let's say the owner has left, that the custodian, if it's put in somebody's care, would want to file the petition, and they should have standing to do that.
Now, what line is this?
Line 23 on page 3.
This is section D?
Yes, ma'am.
Line 23, then.
Okay.
Yes.
And then what we did, we really modernized this whole part of the law by taking the language, deleting it from page 3, line 27, and putting it into a new section, which is section 7 of the bill. And hopefully it reads better. And what it does is it provides that that if the owner contests the seizure of the animal, then they may do that, but they're going to have to, the court will, upon motion, be able to enter an order for the cost of care of the animal, the actual cost. In these cases, can involve a lot of animals and can go on for a long period of time. And this has been a financial problem for, frankly, some of the municipalities and shelters around the state.
But it looks like, Representative Grunberg, that you've deleted the posting of the bond requirement.
No, it's moved to Section 7 of the bill.
Oh, okay. And I'll note that Representative Foster has joined us.
Yeah, this is, we've moved things around and tried to update this, and we've had a number of people help on this. And we've tried to modernize it and make it a good section. So that the order may include a requirement that the owner post a bond or other security to cover the cost of care. And then the final line, if without justifiable cause the owner fails to comply with the order, the court may order that the animal be forfeited, and then they can put it up for adoption or euthanize it if they can't do anything else. Moving ahead to Section 8, we on line 14, rather than define cost of care there, we're defining it, and you'll see the definitions are in Section 10 of the bill, and we've just combined them all and made it updated. And one thing that I thought was kind of important that we did in this.
Representative Keller has a question.
Just clarification. Are we asking questions now or holding them?
No, we're asking questions now.
Although I have a question. And does it not require the use of a vet? And are you saying here in you're on page 4, line 10? Yeah.
The provisions involving vet are unchanged, so they don't appear in the bill. They're in the law now, and they remain.
My question is, the state may not be required to reimburse, and yet in the bill it also requires the use of a vet.
Right, but the state is not required to reimburse. That's in existing law and unchanged. I can find that if you want. If you give me a minute, I can pull up Title III. Would you like that?
No. Okay. If I could, one quick follow-up, sure. And this is more a request to the chair, that we don't act on this bill today so we have time to process.
I was planning on holding the bill.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Section 9.
Excuse me, Madam Chair?
Yes, could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Representative Liz Vasquez. I have a further question from Representative Keller. Representative Keller, were you concerned about the present law as stated in the Section 8, subsection F, line 11 on page 4? Quote, the state may not be required to reimburse a public or private agency. Is that your concern? It's in present law.
Representative Vasquez, through the chair. I really have to admit that I hadn't thought it through that well. I just saw the inconsistency. If you go back in is it Section C, page 2, paragraph C there, that's where it requires the vet. And then I just saw where it says that there can't be any reimbursement. So I saw that inconsistency and raised it. So I hadn't gone any further than that. I was just trying to figure it out.
May I?
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. By the way, that was Representative Vasquez, the prime sponsor.
She introduced herself for the record, Representative.
I was wondering who she was.
She did.
Who's a stranger?
This is, again, to Representative Keller through the chair. This is existing law, and there's no change in that. Now, something we did is add a new subsection G that says in this process nothing shall shift the burden of proof from the party who'd otherwise have the burden. And normally what that means is that the government that's seizing the animal would have the burden of proof, as in any other case like this. There may be some affirmative defenses or something. But we wanted it very clear that nothing would be construed to the contrary.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Keller. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm kind of playing catch-up here, but I got one more. I'd like to go back, if I could, to page 2.
Absolutely.
Okay. On page 2, if you would, just explain to me why we're deleting the peace officer out of that and then reinserting it somewhere else. Just why? What's the significance of that? We're reinserting it on page 4, lines 27 to 31, but it's taken out of this other section.
Yes.
And I just, the ramifications, I just wonder what they are.
Now, we should have one member of Ledge Legal on the phone to confirm this.
Let's see. No, I don't.
Megan Wallace? Is she?
No, we have somebody from the AG's office.
You have to refresh.
We do have Megan Wallace. See, I told you I was learning this
sure.
process. So we do have Megan Wallace to answer questions.
And if she disagrees, I hope that she'll pipe up, because, you know, I can be wrong a lot of times. So
Representative Keller, did you perhaps want to address your question to Ms. Wallace?
I do. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that scrolling on that thing got me, too, in another committee, so I understand.
Madam Chair, I think I could answer it quickly.
I would like to ask Megan, Madam Chair. Megan, if you would, can you give us the ramifications and the significance of the deletion of the definition of peace officer on page 2, lines 13 through 18, and just what the implication is on the reinsertion of that on page 4, lines 27 to 31?
Yes, Representative Keller, through the chair. This is Megan Wallace with Ledge Legal. In response to your question, the term peace officer is currently only defined, as you can see in the bill, in Section 110C. The term is also used in Section AS0355-120 and in 0355-130. And so when you move the definition from AS0355110 to the definitions in AS0355190, the same definition for peace officer will apply to all three sections. So that definition is clarified to apply to section 110, 120, and 130 as opposed to just 110.
Just thank you. That was very clear.
Thank you. Do you want to continue, Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then we pass out of Title III in the first part of the bill, and we we are now moving into the Title XI, and this Section 11.
You mean Section 11, Representative Grunberg?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about, yes. Section 11 is simply a grammatical cleanup of some language in the criminal law dealing with violating a protective order. There should be in your packet a memo from Ledge Legal saying that there is a possibility that the inclusion of this section might violate the single subject rule because it is the only section that doesn't deal with animals directly, although it does deal with domestic violence. And Representative Vasquez and I discussed this and discussed the possibility of excising this and putting it in a different bill, but I wanted to keep it in here for two reasons. Because, as all of you know, occasionally we get memos from Ledge Legal that say such and so violates the single subject rule. It's not uncommon to see that. And it's very, very seldom that the Supreme Court actually uses that and holds that something's unconstitutional. In this particular case, I think it would be very, very unlikely to be raised. It's simply a stylistic change. And secondly, I don't think it does violate the single subject rule. And we have a little memo in there that should be included in your packet.
And who's that little memo from, Representative?
The two of us.
Yeah. And for the record, we're both attorneys.
Representative Vasquez, please identify yourself.
Representative Vasquez, I'm adding to what my colleague is stating. The memo was signed by both of us and expresses our opinion. We're both attorneys, both members of the Alaska Bar Association, for the record.
And we didn't think that this did add another section. I mean, it did add another subject. It simply cleans up some language. It doesn't really deal with a different subject. It's just a technical change. And secondly, the remedy, if something does violate the single subject rule, is that in Title I, there's a statute that says every bill, unless it says otherwise, shall be held to contain a severability clause, which says that so much of it as does violate the single subject rule or whatever is just taken out of the bill. So the only remedy would be that this provision would go out and the current language would remain in. And we thought it was important, and using this as an example, and if you want to take it out, you can, but to establish some precedent, and I intend to do this on the floor, that this, despite what the possibility, they say, would be a violation or would change the bill. I would like to see us not have to shy away from that, because that means in some cases we have to pass a whole new bill.
Does this have anything to do, basically, though, with a bill that we heard last year, or is this just trying to make the law in general a better thing?
What it has to do with, and I'm not exactly sure when it was put in, but... it's intended to help make the law a better thing and deal with this body of law, since we were dealing with this this general idea generally. And it's up to you. You can take it out if you wish. But I thought it was worth at least having some precedent that we can do in this area. It may come in handy on a different bill.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg.
But I mean, I'm not going to fight you. Okay. So
most
next
people don't Christmas tree their own bills, but if that's your desire.
Okay. We will call it winterized.
We'll call it.
Okay. I'm sure.
In the process of this, discussion, though, it does open up the possibility that with that section of law open in the, in your bill, that something can happen in a later committee that may not be noticed because, it's a significant, personally, I really like the single subject law and I want to keep it as tight as possible, and it makes me uncomfortable when, if we intentionally violate it. So.
May I respond?
Representative Grunberg.
Madam Chair, I would be the last one you would ever accuse of letting something slide by. We don't intend to do that in this. If you want to take it out, you can, but you may be at some point wanting to have this as a precedent. Committee's choice.
Representative Klayman, did you have a question? And then Representative Millett.
Not anymore.
Representative Millett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I have some bills that I would be more than happy to get your two legal opinions on, maybe.
We're here.
I just think it's interesting. I just want to point out, I haven't seen a bill come through with legal opinions from the attorneys within our body as legal opinions from the legislature. I think this is a very unique situation. So I just wanted to say that you're offering the service.
Madam Chair, if I may respond. You may remember a few years ago, the governor tried to do something with the budget that was very strange. And they had an attorney general's opinion on the subject. And I don't know if anybody was on the committee. You may have been, Representative Lynn. But I did a memorandum, and ultimately the governor took it out.
Good to know. Thank you. Yeah.
I don't have any problem. I'm happy to. Okay. Anyway.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, before we go on to the next section, I still am puzzling and thinking about this paying of the vets. And when the bill's open is a good time, as I've heard a colleague of mine say, to make sure we clean up the act. And here, a scenario. Please explain this. If my dog is barking and a neighbor calls the police and the police come and orders a vet, do I pay under the existing law? And so you can incur a debt for your neighbor if you got the, yeah. So maybe we should look at fixing that section of the law as long as it's open, so, if that's right.
I won't comment on that until I know what you're talking about. Okay, the next section is a provision of law that was added as the result of a Court of Appeals opinion that recently came out. And I believe, don't we mention that in the documents, Nikolai, the case? Begins with an S. And the question in that case was whether under this particular section of law, I'm on section 12 now, AS 11.61.140A2, which deals with criminal negligence, whether that could apply to just anybody. For example, you walk down the street and you see your neighbor's dog starving and you don't do anything about it. Will you be criminalized? The Court of Appeals said that the legislature had not defined who was subject to the law. It was not in the statute. So what they did was they took the common law approach and they said, pardon me, that it would be a only apply to a person who has a legal duty to care for the animal, either owning the animal or being a pet care, somebody entrusted to the animal. This was a case that involved, I think in the Mat-Su, a bunch of horses and stuff that were just terrifically neglected. You may remember that. Mm-hmm. And so we felt that it was a good idea to put it into the statute itself so you didn't have to look for a Court of Appeals opinion, and that's what this is. Mm-hmm. And this was added just recently.
Representative Keller?
And just a little bit more on that. So to determine who has the legal duty, that'd be something new, right? I mean, that would be something that you're potentially, I mean, it isn't defined, except by other maybe case law? Or
through the chair. That's right. There's a whole body of case law that does this. It's not a new concept. And, you know, as I've said, it's an owner or somebody in the business or somebody who's been entrusted to care for the animal.
So does it, follow up? So does this not incur then, if it's not in there now, and by putting this in there will not cause more determination on who has the legal duty? You see my question?
Through the chair. Doesn't seem to. This seems to have been the first case that there's no other case that's cited in Alaska that has determined this. But it doesn't seem to be an issue that at least any reported case here has dealt with. It does cite a number of cases from other jurisdictions. And I don't think they all go the same way. But this is clearly the majority view. And frankly, in the legislature, what we do with our statutes is pretty cryptic, and then they're interpreted and fleshed out by the judges in the common law. And this is a typical case.
So do I understand correctly that this section basically codifies the common law? Is that what you're telling me?
That's what I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the name of the case, I don't know where it is here. Say again?
Attached.
Oh, the case is attached to it. Yeah, the name of the case, Madam Chair, is, drum roll, Sickle, SICKELV State. It's opinion number 2480, Alaska Appeal Court of Appeals, December 4th, 2015.
And was that the subject of the case, Representative Grunberg?
Yes, it was.
And was somebody prosecuted for failing when they had no legal...
May I respond?
Yes.
A person owned a bunch of horses.
Okay.
And and entrusted the horses to somebody else. That person was prosecuted and said that... I'm not within the ambit of subsection 2 here because I didn't own the horses. And some of them had to be put down and stuff. It was a very terrible situation. And the court said, no, you were entrusted with the horses. Therefore, you had a legal duty not to neglect them. And this was so bad that the horses were frozen to the ground. And two of them they saved, but one of them had to be put down. It wasn't... Not a pleasant case. So the proper person was prosecuted,
okay.
Appealed on that point, lost, the conviction was affirmed.
And so you're trying, if this section were not in there, has a legal duty to care for the animal, aren't we in the same place? I guess I'm not sure exactly what this does.
What it does is it makes it very clear to anybody reading the statute, a trooper or a judge out in the bush or any place, the law remains the same, but you don't have to get there by doing a bunch of legal research. It gives public notice of what I think is a very important holding.
Representative Keller?
Thank you. Representative Grunberg, it seems to me like, you again, I'm going to try to restate what I was saying. It seems like you're inviting a lot of court action there to determine and to define what the legal duty is to care for an animal. And it seems like, you know, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't, you know, there's nothing in the bill that references the case to make that definition. So the question is, shouldn't there be a definition in statute?
Brief it is. Back on record, I think I'll just let you explain your bill right now, Representative Grunberg and Representative Vasquez, and we'll wait for questions until after you've finished explaining, going through the sectional.
That's like putting the cherry on the banana split, right? Okay. Okay. So, since the question's been asked, may I answer it?
Actually, I'd like you to continue through the sectional. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Section 13 simply is a change, and this we're getting now into the domestic violence parts of the bill. And this was the area where the shelters group had some concern about it. And that's where we broke. And that was the hang-up. And some considerable negotiation has ensued. And Representative Klayman was instrumental in reaching an agreement. And we should have an email from the group that's in the record now that says they supported what we have done here. And anyway, what we have done in these sections, they're in the ones in Title 18, we have defined essential personal items to include pets, regardless of the ownership of the items. And what we're talking about is they're not adjudicating who will own the animal, but who will have the animal during the period of the domestic violence order. And it includes pets in the person's care, and also it includes a second provision, and I'm looking now at the bottom of page 7, paragraph 12, and this is a very good provision. It also allows the court to enter an order for the animal's support, which I think can be extremely important, and if the animal has been or is being abused, for example, that can include vet bills. And this provision, by the way, this particular provision was put in at the suggestion of a student. We were asked to teach a class at the University of Alaska Anchorage that's from in the Justice Department. And one of the things that the professor, Kristen Knudsen, had the students do was come up with any amendments they thought would be good in the bill. And one of the students said, well, if you're going to have something in a domestic violence to allow the court to award the possession of the animal, that they also ought to be able to award an order for the support of the animal. And so we put that in. And that, for anybody who's watching this, just goes to show even the students or anybody else, we need all the good advice we can get in this business. Okay, so we have in Section 14, we've defined pet. And once again, the domestic violence folks wanted us to use the term pet in these provisions for domestic violence as opposed to any animal, because the current form that the police use and the courts use is limited to pets. And we've defined pets here. And that's in Section 14. And then we also have tracked AS 18.66, which I believe involves stalking. And that's also a form of domestic violence. And the same language appears there. And That goes through Section 15 of the bill. And, by the way, PET, for that provision, AS 18.66, is defined the same way in Section 17. And that's just the same language it was a few pages before. Now, Section 16 is another provision that we've added. It was suggested by Alan Bailey, who's actually a nationally recognized authority on domestic violence. He has a lot of cases in that area in the family law, active member of the family law section. And he pointed out that the statute, AS 18.66.9903, which defines the crimes, that one of which must be proven in order to be eligible to get a domestic violence order, it did not include cruelty to animals under AS 1161.140A5, which talks about torturing or killing an animal to terrorize somebody else. It's a direct domestic violence, and perpetrators do this. It's not so much for the animal, but to protect the human victim, and the animal too. Okay, then in Section 18, we found that the district court, court of limited jurisdiction, at the current law, does not have jurisdiction over cases under AS 03-55-100-190 that we dealt with at the beginning of the bill. And in many areas of the state where this sort of thing occurs, there's no superior court readily available. And if we have it so that the district court can hear these cases, it's certainly the kind of thing that that they are able to do, and similar to domestic violence. And we just added that. We have consistently, over the last, 20, 30 years, expanded the jurisdiction of the district court, and this just seemed to be an appropriate way to do it.
Thank you.
And finally, the last several sections here, Section 19 and following, amend the divorce and dissolution statutes to allow a court, among other things, to enter an order. And I'm looking at page 14, lines 5 and 6. If there's an animal that's owned, they can enter an order for the ownership of the animal or joint ownership of the animal, taking into consideration the animal's well-being. And traditionally, this is not a very time-consuming process. They may have a very brief hearing or take a testimony of one or two witnesses. And this is the kind of thing that courts now are starting to get into because, as we all know, a lot of Alaskans have pets, and they are considered pretty much members of the family. It's a property, but we have an Alaska case on this subject, and it's talking about as a type of sentient property. It's a live being. It's not a human, but it's not like the ownership of a car or a desk or a piece of property. And these rest of these sections just generally use the same language and track it throughout the divorce and dissolution statutes. And that is basically it. But you can see in the definitions for divorce and dissolution, the last section, section 26, allows any animal to be the subject of such an order. You might have horses or cattle or whatever it would be, but it has to be a vertebrate. And, Madam Chair, that's the thumbnail sketch of the bill.
Thank you. Brief at ease.
Representative Grunberg?
So we have, I think, a few people to testify, not too many. But I'd call your attention to a letter we received from a professor at Michigan State Law School who has complimented us on the bill and thinks it's a pretty good piece of work.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg. So does anybody have any questions specifically about the CS right now? Then I'm going to lift my objection to the CS so that we have the bill before us. But I don't want that to be taken to mean that there are not portions of the bill that the sponsors and I will be talking about before we bring this up again. So we will now that we have the CS in front of us, we will go to, I will begin by opening up public testimony. And so the public testimony is now open. The first person that I see online is Ronnie Rosenberg. And Ronnie, would you like to identify yourself for the record, and then you can tell us your affiliation, and then you can proceed to testify.
Yes, my name is Ronnie Rosenberg, P.O. Box 73755, Fairbanks, 99707, and I am an animal control commissioner and have been for over 20 years with the Fairbanks North Star Borough Animal Control Commission, and I am also a founding member and the president of the Fairbanks Animal Shelter Fund. We are the support group for the Fairbanks North Star Borough Animal Shelter. Over the years, we have spent many thousands of dollars on animals that have been seized in both neglect and domestic violence cases. We very much support getting the ability to get reimbursement for monies expended for veterinary care and supplies for abused and neglected animals. Moreover, as you probably are aware, the FBI has now considered in the last 6 months animal abuse to be a high priority. So it's moving on to the federal focus on this. We may be seeing more animals come in as a result of this. So we think it's really necessary to be able to get reimbursement other than taking these people to court so that a judge at the time of seizure could order the defendant to reimburse. And of course the defendant would have a right to a hearing. There's no question about that. I think having been a lawyer and having worked with domestic violence victims in North Dakota and Minnesota, it's apparent that perpetrators will hold the animal as a pawn, either to keep the person or to terrorize the person, or when that can't be done, they'll inflict injury on the animal just really as a control mechanism. This happens regularly. It's not an exception. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. I know that Alaska law doesn't include non-vertebrates in their animal protection scheme. It's unfortunate that it can't be changed somehow so that that can happen, because people are very attached to their reptiles and their fish. In one case, someone was flushing fish down the toilet as a mechanism to control the victim. But at any rate, I do support this. I hope that it passes. I hope we can have a bipartisan, quick resolution to this and get it on the House floor and then over to the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Rosenberg. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Rosenberg? Then thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
So the next person I have on the line, it looks like for testimony, although I'm not positive, is Tracy Wollenberg from the Public Defender Agency. Tracy, did you want to testify? Or are you simply available for questions?
Madam Chair, this is Tracy Wallenberg. I would like to testify briefly.
Then please proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. As I said, my name is Tracy Wallenberg, and I am the Deputy Director of the Appellate Division at the Public Defender Agency. I'm pleased to appear before you again this session, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on HB 147 today. As I said, I expect my testimony today to be brief. I'd just like to comment on one provision in particular, and that provision is Section 16, which is on page 10. As Representative Gruenberg said, Section 16 adds a particular provision of the cruelty to animals offense to the definition of crime involving domestic violence. Specifically, it adds to the definition of crime involving domestic violence the offense of cruelty to animals under AS 1161-140A5 if the animal is a pet. AS 1161-140A5.
Ms. Wallenberg, I'm trying to find where you're talking about. What page are we on?
I'm on page 10. Section 16, and the addition is at lines 30 and 31.
Thank you. You can continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So cruelty to animals under 1161-140A5 provides that a person commits that offense if, with some exceptions, the person knowingly kills or injures an animal with the intent to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize another person. The concern here is that including this provision wholesale into the definition of crime involving domestic violence, even as limited to situations where the animal is a pet, is overly broad and goes beyond the common understanding of domestic violence. And that's essentially because, as currently written, the persons referred to in AS 1161-140A5, which is the relevant cruelty to animals provision, need not be household members, as that term is defined in AS 1866-990. So I think an example serves to illustrate the point. If a person knowingly injures another's pet, say on the coastal trail here in Anchorage, with the intent to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize that other person, that offense would constitute cruelty to animals under AS 1161-140A5, but it would also be characterized as a domestic violence offense under this proposal, even though the two people had never met before the confrontation. So essentially, the proposal in Section 16 scoops into the definition of domestic violence persons who commit a certain type of animal cruelty in an effort to essentially harass or threaten others, even if the people involved have no pre-existing domestic relationship. I assume that the intent of the provision, however, was primarily to prevent a person from harming a pet with the intent to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize another person with whom that there is a pre-existing domestic relationship. And I think that intent can be clarified not only by limiting animals to pets, but also by limiting the persons who are the target of the intimidation or threatening to household members. And again, household members is also defined under the existing statute 1866-995, subsection 5. In conclusion, I think this provision could, to effectuate what I assume is the intent of the committee, the provision could define domestic violence or crime involving domestic violence as including cruelty to animals under AS 1161-140A5, not only if the animal is a pet, but also if the person who's the subject of intimidation, threatening, or terrorizing is a household member under subsection 5. That was really what I wanted to comment on today. I appreciate the time, and I'd be happy to take any questions on this.
Thank you. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on behalf of both of us and the sponsors of the bill, we'll be happy to work with you and come up with a language that would be so limiting. I didn't realize that it was broader than it should have been, and it was certainly our intent to limit it to the people who are subject to domestic violence orders, household members.
Thank you. Any other questions? You look like you're about ready to ask a question, Representative Clayman.
No, not yet.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Wallenberg. And as I mentioned earlier, we're not planning on passing the bill out today, so there will be time for you and Representative Grunberg and Representative Vasquez to work this out. The next person that I have online is, actually she's not online, I think it's Lori Morton from the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault here in Juneau.
Give that out.
So please identify yourself and tell us your affiliation and you can proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Laurie Morton. I'm the Executive Director of the State Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you for hearing the bill today. My remarks go toward the protective order provisions of the bill. People who choose to commit acts of domestic violence use whatever they perceive as effective means of control to coerce the people they victimize. All too often, pet abuse is one of those means. They may refuse to allow the pet to be taken to the vet for care. They may threaten to harm or kill the pet. They may actually harm or kill the pet. They may target pets of family or friends. They may blame the disappearance of the family pet on a victim to create a wedge between her or him and the children. They may file theft charges if the victim leaves with pets or may enter into custody battles over pets. Bonds between pets and their owners are very strong. Sometimes victims are hurt trying to protect their pets. Sometimes they wait to leave because they don't have anywhere to go with their pets. Sometimes they return because of the fear of what will happen to their pets. In a national study, over 71% of women who sought shelter were concerned with leaving their pets at home or whether or not they would have a place to safely take them. Animal abuse also functions as an indicator of high lethality. Research has found that batterers who abuse pets are more dangerous than those who don't. In fact, pet abusing batterers employ more controlling behaviors, more sexual assault, marital rape, emotional violence, and stalking. Other studies have revealed that a history of threatened or actual pet abuse is one of the four most significant risk factors for becoming a domestic violence abuser. It is important to offer protections for pets to increase safety tools for victims to use as they attempt to flee the violence perpetrated against them. In Alaska, victims who choose to file petitions for protective orders may include pets in the order now. There's a general provision to allow any other kind of order, the relief the court deems necessary in order to further that protection. This bill, however, adds the specific language of pets and I think helps victims and petitioners understand that that's a readily available remedy to them. In addition, there are shelters in Alaska. We fund 18 of those programs. Many of them are able to offer places for pets to stay on the premises. If they're not, they help the petitioner or the victim who needs that service to find other safe places, maybe with veterinarians. One regional shelter has worked with safe homes so that the pet can go into a home of a person who would foster the pet, for example. So we appreciate the opportunity to have pets included in the language for protection orders and think it will make it a stronger protection for victims as they escape violence. If I might add, I'm not an attorney, but I definitely think the previous person was misunderstanding the list of crimes involving domestic violence. On line 19 of page 10, the offense has to be committed for a household member to another household member. Mm-hmm. So that's already covered. And if it seems to me if her argument was accurate in that sense, then none of these crimes would work, right? So sorry, but I just thought I'd add that in.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Morton? Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just ask, with leave of the Chair, hearing the testimony of Ms. Morton, if we could ask Ms. Wallenberg if she, under the circumstance, thinks her concern is already addressed.
Actually, that's a good observation, Representative Grunberg. Ms. Wallenberg, are you still on the line?
I am.
And do you have any comments?
Well, I appreciate the speaker's comment in pointing that out, and that was an oversight on my part, which I apologize to the committee for. I'm just looking at the language now to see if that solves the problem, if you just bear with me for one moment.
Certainly.
I think, the concern, my only concern is that there are two potential victims of the A5 crime under 140. The animal is the subject, obviously knowingly kill or injures an animal. And then the intent provision is to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize another person. So I would just want the legislative history, and if that were the intent, the language to be clear that the person who's referred to in the animal cruelty provision is really the household members you're talking about and not the pet.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was not really a fair question on my part. I would ask the two of you to get together with our staff, Nikolai and Mike, and Nikolai will coordinate this, to see what language you all come up with, and then I can bring that back to the committee.
Absolutely.
And I'd be happy to do that through the chair.
Thank you. Representative Lynn has a question before you leave.
I may have missed a very important part of this, but you have a pet. Who's, is it joint property? The one who acquires the cat or dog and brings it home? How is this? And then if the pet is being abused for perhaps the purpose of intimidating the other member, can either one take the cat or dog and take him to a safe place, a shelter, or to a friend's house without permission of the other? Yeah, maybe I missed this.
I think that's probably not a question for Ms. Mortensen. I think that's probably a question for the bill sponsor, Representative Lynn.
Well, at the proper time, I'd appreciate clarification on it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So it does not look like I've got anybody else online who wants to testify. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? You want to testify, Representative Grunberg?
Well, I just wanted to put something on the record.
Well, perhaps you'd let me close public testimony first.
This would relate to public testimony.
Go ahead.
Late last week, we received some suggestions by the Council for the Humane Society, who happens to be a law professor back east in New York, and we just talked to her this afternoon, and some of them are well taken, and if we have a little extra time, I'm going to take a look at those, and maybe when we take the bill up again, if we do, I'd ask that she be allowed to talk about a couple of the things, but I don't want to do something just on the fly.
Thank you. Well, at this moment, I am going to close public testimony. If there is somebody in particular that the sponsor of the bill would like to invite to testify, that's certainly something that we can discuss. So I'm closing public testimony right now, and we will adjourn this meeting because I'm not planning on moving the bill at this point. So it is 2:15 right now, and this meeting of House Judiciary is adjourned.